Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about soybean fungicides and insecticides. But you know what? If you don't raise soybeans, a lot of the fungicides and insecticides are the same in just about every crop. Certainly the chemical families and in many cases the active ingredients are the same. So anyway, I'm just trying to say, doesn't matter what crop it is, you are absolutely going to get something out of this show when we talk fungicides and insecticides. We are broadcasting today from the Morton Studio. If you've got a question for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's going on in your farm, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, our phone number here is 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. Or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So when it comes to fungicides and insecticides, just in general, I've got a couple of things that I'll tell you. First of all, prices are down again this year on fungicides, so that's great news. Insecticide prices have been really inexpensive in the past, and they continue that way this year. I wouldn't say insecticide prices are down much, but they're down just a little bit. So the cheapest insecticides, we talk all the time about the pyrethroids, they come from the chrysanthemum flower, and they're about $2. So super cheap. And really the biggest thing with insecticides is just make sure you scout and identify that you have harmful insects out in your field. If you do, get them sprayed. It doesn't take very many bugs to justify $2 worth of insecticide. On the fungicide piece, because of all the rebate programs and the price reductions this year, we've been talking about that a lot here on the show recently, you can find a lot of great fungicides, even full rates in the $4 to $10 range. So it's fun when we have good options that don't cost a fortune. Because let's face it, at the end of the day, our job as farmers is not to cut costs. Our job as farmers is to try to make more money. I don't mind investing $4 or $10 or whatever it is, as long as I can get a decent return. Obviously, it's a little bit more challenging when the price of soybeans and the price of corn is a little lower, or whatever, price of wheat, any crop you raise. So we would just really encourage you, take a look at what your actual cost is going to be. If you're just looking at what it was last year, the year before that, you might be surprised at how much less it is this year. So already this year, a lot of the farmers that we work with around the country, and around the United States anyway, and agronomists, they're telling us, you know what, fungicide sales are actually way up, even though the markets are down a little bit. And the reason why is just because the big companies, and well, everybody, generics, anybody, has cut the costs. And we talk about this all the time. There's a lot of elasticity there. In other words, that means as the price goes down, the usage goes up. Only makes sense. So I'm certainly more interested in it on our farm as well. But I will say this, when we start talking soybean fungicides, they're basically two different categories for us in our region we typically talk about. Is it a white mold fungicide or is it just a general fungicide? Either way, we would prefer to see multiple modes of action used so that way we have less chance of disease resistance out there. You might not be aware of this, but even way up here in South Dakota, in the northern part of the United States, we are getting a lot of disease resistance now. So if you take a look at frog eye leaf spot, we've got it all the way up here in South Dakota now. And unfortunately, the frog eye is resistant to the strobes in most cases. We've got other diseases like brown spot, for example, resistant to the strobes. White mold, the strobes don't work very well on that. I mean, there are a lot of issues with certain fungicides and certain diseases. So our advice is just get multiple modes of action out there. Now you've got a much better chance for success.
And you're seeing that with many of the products that are being released. They are multiple mode of action products. Many of them have had two modes of action now for a number of years. We're starting to see a lot of three mode of action fungicide products, which is great. A lot more SDHI products available out there, which has been another thing that I've really liked, Brian, because we are seeing improvements in the plant health benefits. We're also seeing a broader spectrum of diseases controlled. And then when we're putting three modes of action, we're oftentimes getting a longer residual out of those products when we're spraying those later season applications. And what I mean by that is with fungicides, we're just protecting the leaves that we coat with the fungicide. So if you're spraying mid-season and there's a lot more vegetative growth going on after that, you're only protecting those leaves that are out there the day you spray. You're not protecting the new leaves that come out afterwards. But if you're talking about how long that coverage will last on the leaves that it landed on, yeah, we're getting a little longer residual out of these products. So that's a good thing.
So the three main chemical families that we're typically talking about, or fungicide modes that we're typically talking about, are, I already mentioned the strobilurin products, or strobe for short. That'd be like Headline, Quadris, Aveto. Darren mentioned SDHIs. There aren't a lot of straight SDHIs that you're going to find out there, maybe like Luna and some of the specialty crops, or if you think about Xemium, they talk about Preaxor. Well, that's a combination of Headline and, rather than telling you the active ingredient, they say Xemium. Okay, so the Xemium portion would be an example. And then the third category would be triazoles. Those have been out for a really long time. You can go all the way back to old Tilt that got a lot of use. But there are a tremendous amount of triazole products out there. And so those are the three, the strobes, the SDHIs, and the triazoles that we will typically talk about. Now, there are a few other groups. So you can look at chlorothalonil, for example. There are other fungicide modes of action, certainly. But in terms of foliar fungicides, for most crops, those are the three that we're typically looking at. So when you are getting whatever fungicide you want to get for your farm, just find out what you've got. Now, one of the things, too, when a lot of people talk about soybean fungicides, they say, ooh, I'm worried about the stay green late in the year. For me, I don't mind that. I just look at, hey, I got a healthier plant. But if you want to try to avoid that, usually that means you leave out the strobe. You find something that's an SDHI and a triazole, not a strobe.
I like green crop as long as we can have it in the air. That's why we're talking about soybean fungicides and insecticides on the show today and keeping our plants healthy and achieving high yields. We're taking your calls and questions as well throughout the show. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's in for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about soybean fungicides and insecticides. And Brandon mentioned this to start the show off. Even if you're not raising soybeans or you're not concerned about disease or insects where you are raising soybeans, a lot of the products that we're going to talk about and techniques we're going to talk about will apply to other crops. And our first guest is absolutely an example of that. We've got Nick Flights on right now with Pentair to talk a little about how to deliver those products onto the plants, getting great spray coverage and so forth. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
You know, we were talking about wheat with you the other day, and I know wheat, a lot of times it's a thick canopy. It really fills in pretty quick. Soybeans, depending on the row spacing that growers have, could be the same thing. If we're talking about drilled soybeans versus wider rows, for example, there's a lot of difference when you go from one soybean producer to the next in trying to get spray coverage.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it can be a lot of similarities with wheat crops. There can also be a lot of differences and a lot of differences between, you know, different production systems with soybeans. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you get the thicker canopy, tighter row spacing if we're on, you know, 15-inch rows or drilling it even closer than that. That complex canopy, a lot of horizontally oriented leaves can pose some challenges in getting that spray down into the canopy. And looking at fungicides and insecticides, you know, most of these products are contact in nature, right? We got to get a lot of coverage. We got to get a lot of canopy penetration to get down in there to make sure that we get a high-performing application. And so there's a few tips and things that I like to promote for these applications, a few easy things that, you know, can be adopted. They're going to go a long way into getting good, you know, insect and disease control. And the easiest way to increase coverage, I always tell people, is make sure we're using an adequate water volume. Don't skimp on water. And I really like to see 10, 12, 15 gallons an acre for fungicide applications. That's going to be the best way, the simplest way to get good coverage and canopy penetration. We should also talk about droplet size. You know, a lot of these applications are going on later in season when it's hot and sunny, and that introduces a lot of evaporative potential on spray droplets, particularly the finest ones. So a medium to coarse size droplet is really the ideal droplet size for fungicide and insecticide applications. Droplets that are finer than that have a really high risk of evaporating and drifting before they reach the target.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense when you think about, you know, like you said, when we're putting some of these products out, a lot of times it's mid-season to even later into the season when we see the worst of the bug outbreaks and disease problems. So that I can buy that. Let's talk about one specific disease, Nick, white mold. And I know this is one that's near and dear to our hearts because it's a tough one in the area where we farm. We see a lot of white mold in soybeans. They say we've got to get coverage on every flower all the way down that plant. So when you've got a little bigger plant, obviously we can try and time the application slightly earlier when we can get through that canopy better. But what about when we are mid-season trying to get a fungicide down through that canopy? Is there anything different? Are you seeing anything with the incline of the nozzle or anything that could help?
Yeah, so talking about nozzle design, you know, a lot of times in the past, we've used dual fan nozzles. So a single, you know, nozzle that has two smaller spray tips on an incline with them. And those have worked pretty well, but there is a downside to them. And that's that we're splitting the energy of the spray solution into two smaller spray patterns, two smaller orifices. So, you know, what some nozzle companies have been doing recently is using a single nozzle, putting it on an incline, and then alternating the way that nozzle faces across the boom. And so that helps us conserve that energy into a single spray tip, so we get a lot more energy and velocity coming out of that spray tip for those droplets to really push and drive down into the canopy. So the Hypro 3D is a good example. The Hypro John Deere Guardian or LDX is a really good example. All the other, you know, Greenleaf, TJ, all the nozzle companies have an example like that. But we've really seen great performance with that Hypro 3D with the steep incline. You know, 37 degrees is higher incline than most nozzles. Keeping it all into that single tip gives us a lot of velocity to push deep into that canopy. And we've seen a lot of people adopting that nozzle for the very case you're talking about in white mold.
Yeah, we sure do like that 3D nozzle on our farm as well that you mentioned. We're talking with Nick Flights with Pentair. Nick, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate all the ideas that you've got for getting better spray coverage. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on.
We've got A.J. Holman with us right now with Bayer. A.J., how are you today?
I'm doing well, Darren. Yourself?
Good, good. Okay, we're talking about soybean fungicides and insecticides, and right away, I know a lot of our listeners are thinking, oh, we're talking about post-emerge stuff. We haven't even got stuff planted yet. No, we're talking about fungicides and insecticides throughout the season, and your first opportunity comes when you plant that seed. What's cooking for this year for soybean seed treatments?
Yeah, no, that's a good call. I mean, when we think about foliar, maybe post-emerge, like you said, but I mean, before we even go into planting season, it's to ensure that we are protected with a fungicide and an insecticide seed treatment. And so, you know, if you look at the way things are shaping up outside, I mean, it's definitely cool and moist in a lot of areas. And that's where different disease pathogens like Pythium and Fusarium can really thrive. So ensuring that we've got a fungicide to protect against that. One of the trends that I've seen this year, probably more so than ever, is guys planting soybeans earlier and earlier, chasing that maximum yield. I mean, I've had sales reps tell me up in Michigan, they're planting soybeans already. And so ensuring that, you know, the earlier that we go to chase that maximum yield, ensuring that we've got full protection to go out there and get those different diseases. You know, I talked about Pythium and Fusarium, but maybe you're in an environment where it's actually too wet to plant, and so things might be a little bit delayed than they typically would be. When it gets warmer out, different disease pathogens like Phytophthora and Rhizoctonium, that can really thrive in those, you know, warmer temperatures. So ensuring that you've got a fungicide seed treatment to really combat against whatever Mother Nature might throw at you is the best foot forward. And so, you know, that's fungicides, but also, I mean, there's other different things that seed treatment can protect against. You talk about insecticides, no doubt, but also there's nematicides. There are different biologicals or inoculants that folks can be using as part of a seed treatment to ensure they're helping establish a really good stand from the get-go.
One thing I think about too, AJ, is when we say seed treatment, I think some farmers just say, well, that's just to protect my seed, and they forget about how much protection they're getting for that young seedling and how long some of these protections can last.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another good call-out that I think is often overlooked. I mean, seed treatment can have efficacy on the plant upwards of 30 days and beyond. So ensuring that that plant, when it's in those early development stages and susceptible to a wide variety of different disease, insects, et cetera, having that protection, again, for up to 30 days and sometimes beyond, helps establish the fact that we're going to have a good plant development and can ensure that we put more grain in the bin at the end of the year.
Now, going into this season, there's a lot of farmers talking about, as you mentioned, some tough conditions still in some areas and also prevent plant acres. Anything else that you'd say really stands out as you get into the prevent plant ground when guys are putting soybeans into ground that hasn't really had a crop there for over a year?
Yeah, a good thing that I like to suggest when going into maybe something that's been fallow ground or wasn't planted at all this past year is maybe going with an inoculant. And so what that inoculant will help us do is going with the rhizobia-based inoculant will help us establish that microbial activity underneath the soil, that beneficial microbial activity that can really help the soybean start the nodulation process and fix nitrogen as well to get it really going in those early development stages.
A lot of things to think about this year, and it starts with that seed decision and what we're going to put on that seed. We've been talking to A.J. Holman with Bayer. A.J., thank you so much, and good luck. You're heading into the spring.
Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it.
Talking about soybean fungicides and insecticides on our show today, and I did mention before our phone lines are open, but I didn't give that number. It's 844-44-AG-PHD. If you've got an agronomic question or want to join the discussion, that's 844-442-4743. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce Herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
We planted early February and have all good emergence. So far, we can't find any condition that the wheels haven't worked. I can just say that.
Closing the seed trench behind the planter is essential to establishing yields in the fall. Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer who is tired of seeing poor stands because of uneven emergence, the Germinator is here to give your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. For more information, visit us at farmshopmfg.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We are a little disappointed that we have to be inside in the studio today because there's still a little bit of snow outside trying to melt, but we've got warmer weather coming up here soon. You know, this cold weather's been all around the country. Our next guest here, Matt Miles, farms down in Arkansas. And Matt, you guys had some cold weather too.
It's been this year's definitely been a challenge. I was telling someone the other day, out of all the years I've been farming, this might be one of the most challenging springs I've ever been in. Which it didn't get down to be like 38 last night, so we didn't get a frost. But we also have some V5 corn in the ground, so we didn't need a frost.
No, that's for sure. All right. Talk to us just a little bit about fungicide use. You talk about what kind of year you've had. I know you guys were awfully wet there for a while too. Do you look for it to be more of a disease year?
I really think it probably will. This is some of the crazier weather we've had. But we always try to protect it no matter if we think it's going to be a good year or a bad year. I've learned my lesson the hard way on seed treatments and fungicides, even getting later up in the year when the temperatures were warmer and thinking, well, I don't really need to treat this seed, don't need a fungicide on it, insecticide, and then it end up with 20% less population and usually a little less yield.
You know, when we look at insecticides as well, this is something we're always scouting for bugs. I know the bugs that we face up here. How about in Arkansas? Are you finding some troublesome insects in soybeans? Have there been any new species that have been coming in the last few years?
Oh, yeah. 3 years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, we were introduced to the red band stink bug, which is probably the most ferocious insect we've dealt with. they reproduce so fast, and it kind of surprised us, and we didn't really know what to do. The universities were not real sure what to do, and it cost us a lot of money, but later planted beans especially. And then, you know, the last couple of years we didn't have it. We had pretty decent winters. This winter's actually been mild. The spring's been probably colder than the winter was, and they're thinking we're going to have a serious issue with them this year. It probably costs us another $15, $20 an acre just to try to combat those red band stink bugs.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's not cheap at all. How do you get them? Is coverage a real critical thing? Is it just getting them before they explode into big numbers? What do you find being the most important?
Numbers. I mean, you've got to keep them. You got to kind of keep them at bay. Like I said, they reproduce or seem to reproduce, you know, way faster than the green or the brown stink bug. So they're tougher. They're harder to kill. So you've got to go at it with a couple different modes of action. You know, we're usually running an acephate and a bifenthrin at pretty stout rates, you know, and just keeping them down 4 or 5 days. And then, you know, then they're coming back from there. Now that was 1 year, 2 years ago. So that's the first year we've dealt with it a lot, but you know, it's kind of shaping up to maybe be another year like that this year.
Do you have to spray fungicides and insecticides even in the vegetative stages, or for the most part, are you making it to reproduction before you have to make those applications?
We can, you know, now there's certain outbreaks of insects at different times where you have to put an insecticide out earlier, but most of the time we get to that R3, R4 stage. And if you plant your beans early enough, I know AJ was talking about the earlier planted beans, and you know, we skip a lot of those insect problems by pushing that window to plant earlier. So, you know, we stay out of some of those worm issues that you get, you know, towards the end of the year down here. So, fungicide wise, you know, we've done some tests and, you know, researched that for years. And, you know, we like that R3 application of fungicide. Might not have any disease in, but it's just a protection plan to keep you through the year.
Yeah, definitely a lot of things that you have to think about as you travel around the country. I like that tip about earlier planting to miss late season insect outbreaks. And a lot of times we hear about the heat that you have to deal with. And I know that can't hurt either, to try to get ahead a little bit of that and catch a little more of that long sunlight time weather time in the middle of June as well. Talking with Matt Miles down in Arkansas. Matt, thank you so much. I know you're busy, but really appreciated your time today. And thanks for the insight as well.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good day.
Bet. You too. Get Kelly Garrett on with us right now. Farms down in Iowa. Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, it's going pretty well. You guys been able to start any planting yet?
I have planted 140 acres of beans and planted those on April 7th. So earliest I've ever planted. April 8th was the previous record. We've had some 19-degree nights. I'm interested to see what happens, but I really think it's going to be okay.
Yeah, Brian was really excited about getting stuff planted, so we put a little bit of corn in just to kind of get our planters set, and of course we had some electronic issues and so forth that we had to work through, which is great to do on a day that you really don't care if you're out there. But in the meantime, we got 6 inches of snow on everything, so we were kind of wondering if that snow would maybe insulate the ground a little bit and give us a little bit of protection. But yeah, we got some seed out there too, and we didn't skimp, I should say, on fungicide and so forth that we're putting in the furrow and on the seed. Is that something on those early planted beans that you found to really pay for you?
Yes. We'll have a humic acid, a Black Max 22. We'll have Accomplish. We'll have Radiate. You know, the beans our beans are treated with your seed treatment, the heat shield, you know, the NutriCycle. I'm really excited about that. I think it'll be great. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. That's really early. April 7th is definitely earlier than we've ever got beans out there. All right, let's talk in season now. Do you see any reason that you have to spray fungicides before you get to the reproductive stages where you're at in Iowa?
No. A lot of time, you know, like I heard Matt talk about R3, we might do it then. We might do it at that time, and we'll wait. You know, we'll wait until... We'll kind of try to wait as long as possible if we don't see any disease, because we want the coverage to last as long as possible. And we always spray a fungicide and an insecticide at the same time we really feel that there's a synergy between the two, and there's a gain there.
I agree, and you don't always know what you're going to have for disease pressure, but if you've got some bugs out there, you know they are certainly going to cause some problems. Are you getting more stink bugs, too? We've started to see some up in our geography, not a huge amount yet, but how about in Iowa?
We have a few stink bugs. They are becoming a little bit more prevalent, but what we had last year was thistle caterpillars. And on some of my earliest planted beans, last year the earliest ones were April 17th, 18th, they were a huge problem.
Interesting.
And we had damage from them. We even replanted one field.
Yeah, they were really prevalent last year. All the way up into North Dakota, we had growers that were very surprised by their presence. There's always those unusual bugs that come. How about for disease? Is that more predictable? Are you seeing the same types of diseases pop up each year in soybeans?
Yeah, you know, we don't really get much white mold or anything in our hills. We'll have some sudden death, you know, is about the worst one that we'll get. I spray fungicide every acre. I believe it is a huge advantage. And I spray with my ground rake, and I will spray 20 gallons to the acre when I'm making those passes. You know, you're making tracks out there rather than going with the airplane, but that extra coverage, getting that down into the canopy is a big deal.
Hey, you mentioned SDS, Kelly. A lot of times folks are focusing on varietal tolerance and then also putting something like an Olivo or a Saltro in furrow. How do you manage that SDS on your farm?
It shows up once in a while, but it isn't. That's about the only thing we get, but it's not a huge problem. You know, there's other diseases that will come in every bit, but there isn't enough SDS around that I'll do anything different. We'll try to, you know, hybrid selection would be about the only thing that we would do.
Sure. How soon are you going to be back in planting soybeans or corn, and what will be the next crop you put in?
I'll put soybeans in probably Friday. You know, we do have a little chance of rain tonight and tomorrow, but probably Friday. I think it'll be warm enough. I want the soil temperature to get back up to 55 before I'll plant corn.
Gotcha. Talking with Kelly Garrett. Oh, go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, we're one of the first people out there planting beans, and we're one of the last people out there planting corn.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it works out. Last year did quite well in yield contests, so might be on to something down there. We're talking with Kelly Garrett in Western Iowa. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us here. Good luck and stay safe this spring. Stay tuned. We're talking about soybean fungicides and insecticides on our show.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or Water Hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new OpenSky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep. Discover more OpenSky details at OpenSkyHerbicide.com.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from HyPro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. HyPro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio today. If you've got a question for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's happening on your farm right now, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a few minutes. Before we do, to kind of wrap things up in this soybean fungicide and insecticide thing, earlier in the show I was talking a little bit about the foliar fungicides and insecticides. And again, the insecticides, really inexpensive. You've got pyrethroids, you've got the old Lorazban. We even have some of these new aphid killers. Now, they're pretty easy on beneficials. They kill aphids, but they don't kill a whole lot else out there. So if you have a whole bunch of harmful insects in your soybeans, it's not going to work very well. But you do have Safina and Transform. So again, that's Safina from BSF and Transform from Corteva. Very specific products, real good on aphids. They cost around $6 an acre, so not terrible. In terms of fungicides, we see a lot of use of foliar fungicides trying to stop diseases like white mold, brown spot, frog eye leaf spot, a lot of different diseases out there. For most of the diseases, we usually will say, you know, if you want to spray at about that kind of R2 stage and maybe again at R4, so that'd be like full flower and then full pod, that's probably pretty good. But if you've got white mold, or if you're worried you're going to have white mold, we would suggest starting right at R1. First flower, you should be out there. We really need to get out in front of that whole white mold thing. Otherwise, it's just impossible. That's the worst disease in soybeans. That's even way worse than, you know, people talk about Asian soybean rust and, you know, some of these diseases in different parts of the world. Nope, the worst soybean disease that I know of is Sclerotinia white mold. Anyway, there are lots of good fungicides. We would just tell you, use multiple modes of action, and costs are a lot less this year than they have been really for a long time. Okay, then we turn our attention to the seed treatment side, and there's been a lot of talk about seed treatments today. We aren't going to discuss all the different biologicals because there are a ton of them. Obviously, you've got inoculant that's been around forever. You've got plenty of these newer ones that have come out, like, let's say, Quick Roots, Nutricycle, Heat Shield, Microcycle. There are lots of different ones. But anyway, let's talk about insecticides and fungicides. There's really only one insecticide family. That's the neonicotinoid family, and that would include Gaucho, Poncho, and Cruiser. They're all basically the same thing. What they really are is they're from the nicotine family. And I realize that if you're going to smoke several packs of cigarettes every day for most of your life, yep, got some serious health consequences there. But when we're talking about something that is nicotine-based and you're only around it a little bit, the health profile actually for human beings is quite good. And in terms of livestock, you know, animals, there really aren't any problems. The only issue that they've had with these neonics is when they've been sprayed post-emerge, not as a seed treatment, post-emerge, because they've killed bees. So don't use them post. Just use them as insecticide on the seed. Use that insecticide on the seed, and you avoid the bee kill thing, and most everything else is good. They're really cheap. They're systemic, great on a lot of different insects, so that's awesome, and that's really the only choice we have right now. It's either you're going to use a neonic or are you not. We don't have other options. Okay, then we go to the fungicides. Big thing here is just use multiple modes of action. Talk to your seed dealer about what are you putting on my seed in the seed treatment package. There are lots of different products out there. So perhaps the most popular is the group fours. That would be like Apron, Allegiance, been around for a long time, real good on Pythium. You've got newer ones like Intego that's out, also good on Pythium. Then you go to the group 11s. We talked about those already, the Strobes, Quadris, Headline. They actually can get used as seed treatments also. You've got group 12, Maxim. So for example, Syngenta has Cruiser Max or Apron Max. Well, that Max part means Maxim. That's group 12. It's pretty good on Rhizoctonia. You've got other products good on Rhizoctonia too. Group 1's Topsin, for example, Mertect. So there are a lot of different fungicides to pick from as a seed treatment. But here's the other big thing I would tell you as a seed treatment. And what I always look for is I just want something that dries down, dries well on the seed, so I don't have bridging and clumping. So if you're finding that with your seed dealer, I'd complain and I'd say, hey, find something different. I know for us at Ag PhD, we do a tremendous amount of research on things. And it took us forever, it seemed like, to find things that all mix together. So we actually put 36 things on our seed at Ag PhD and on our Hefty Farm. 36 treatments go on the seed, dries great, no problems. So I'm just trying to say there are combinations and ways you can do things so it can be effective out in the field, but also efficient when you're using this at planting time and you want to go out and plant without having planter problems, clumping, bridging, all those kind of issues. Again, we are big believers in using some fungicide. We are big believers in using insecticide as well. You know, with all these things, we have to look at the dollars and cents all the time and make sure that it's going to pay. So also make sure you're asking about, okay, what else do I get with my seed treatment? So for example, with us, when we buy the seed treatment we buy, we get up to 2 free resprays of insects. We get free seed treatment again on replants if we have to replant. So just look at these kind of things and what you're going to spend. So like for us on our 36 treatments, we spend about $15. Yep, it's a lot. It's 2 bushels of beans roughly, but we gain much more than that. And one last thing I'll leave you with on seed treatments. Darren brought this up earlier in the show. He said a lot of people think about seed treatments as just getting your seed out of the ground. That is absolutely not it. We see these fungicides and insecticide systemic and staying in that plant for 2 to 3 months and having actual pretty good control for at least a month or two. So that's a lot more than just popping it out of the ground. So anyway, all things that you can take a look at on your farm, especially if you're planting early into cooler, wetter soils, boy, the seed treatment really pays. And just think, you know, like corn, would you ever even dream about planting corn without seed treatment? No way. So why would you put soybeans out there without seed treatment? Just something for you to think about. Again, run the numbers yourself on your farm. I know we certainly have many times over the years, and the whole fungicide, insecticide, I mean, just all the seed treat stuff that we do and naturals, biologicals, it pays if you get the right products out there. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag.
Question from Nicholas. When I'm spraying my pre-emerge herbicides on top of the ground, how much time do I have before it needs to be tilled into the soil? Should I be spraying each acre and then tilling it right in, or are some products available for me to leave longer?
Almost everything can be sprayed on the soil surface, and you don't have to worry about it for 2 to 4 weeks. And within that time, most likely you're going to be getting a rain anyway. The only product I would really worry about would be trifluralin or sonalan along with that. So those two yellows, same chemical
family. Or if you have Eptam in alfalfa or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. So that'd be like the old Eradicane, Eptam for alfalfa. So that, trifluralin and sonalan, and otherwise most everything else you can just spray out on the soil surface, but and let it sit for quite a while. If you've got a specific product you are questioning, just send us the name of that specific product and then we can answer that particular question. But yeah, for the most part, you're going to be in good shape.
Question from Linda. She said, can you tell me if you think Acuron would be a good choice for us in corn this year? What are the pros and cons?
Well, it depends on how much you're going to use. My number one concern with Acuron is some people use the full rate pre-emerge, and I just worry about how much HPPD is in the ground. It's going to carry over to next year if you use, in effect, double what the foliar rate is and you put that in the soil, it's going to carry over in a lot of cases, especially in the northern United States. So what we would typically recommend is, hey, if you want to do that, it's fine. Just make sure you plant LLGT27 beans next year because those are tolerant to HPPD carryover. The other issue I've got with it, or concern I would have with it, is how much atrazine are you putting out there? So I like Acuron real early post. That's phenomenal because I've got Dual, I've got Callisto, I've got atrazine, I got this bicyclopyrone, another HPPD, all things that work fantastically well early post. If I use it pre, I just worry about that atrazine being out there. If I get great big rains, especially in light soils, I potentially could wash that atrazine down into the groundwater. So those are my only big hangups. But yeah, it's an excellent product, controls lots of weeds for a pretty good price. Stay tuned, we'll get to more of your questions next.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
This is a seed bag. This bag is made of Kraft paper with a cellophane liner and provides nothing for seed growth. This is a seed bed. It was prepared with Case IH soil management tools. It optimizes everything from nutrient access to water infiltration to create the perfect environment for early uniform emergence. Get to know why your seed bed drives productivity at caseih.com/soil management.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, and we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. That means our phone lines are open throughout the rest of the show for your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or, of course, you can email us, radio@agphd.com. It's exactly what Caleb did, and he sent over a number of soil tests. He said his big question, Brian, is he put on 800 pounds of gyp soil last fall, and he says, I'm a bit disappointed. My sulfur levels are still seemingly low and have hardly changed compared to last fall's samples. Is it possible the sulfur in the gypsum just hasn't come available yet? If so, how long does it take? I was planning on that being my sulfur source for the year, but now I'm considering putting on some ammonium sulfate with my spring strip-till mix.
Okay, here's what's concerning to me. As I look through some of his samples, I see all kinds of hot spots. So basically what happened is he sent us And I don't know how big the grids are, grid points or anything else, but he sent us field maps and then showed us all these grid points in each field.
I think they're one-acre grids.
Okay, and what the level was in those spots. So just for example, here's one field that I'm looking at. Well, there certainly are spots that say 11 or 12 or 17 parts per million, all we would not be happy with, right? I mean, that's certainly not enough sulfur to raise big-time crop. But in the same field, you've got other spots that are saying 214, 292. You see where I'm going with this? Was the gypsoil spread evenly? It doesn't appear to me that either it was or that everything broke down in the field perfectly well. I don't know exactly when you applied that last fall, but let's put it this way. Where we farm, and let's see, he's from Wisconsin, so just think about how cold it is. All right, you probably spread it late in the fall, and now you ran your test March 31. Well, there's most likely still frost in the ground at that point, so how much breakdown was really occurring there? Odds are extremely high your gypsoil will be broken down here over the course of the next month. I'm not too worried about it, but what is concerning is when I see spots that are saying in the 200s and other spots in the same field saying down into the teens or less. So that worries me just a little bit, but let's hope, and I'm going to hope that maybe somebody just, when they were sampling, let's put it this way, if you hadn't done any tillage, maybe they kicked it off to the sides because they saw, oh, there was stuff on the ground. And in the spots where the levels are super high, they didn't kick it off to the sides. I don't know what caused it. But no, I'm not too worried that gypsoil will not be broken down in time for use by your crop. And if you put on 800 pounds, you know, we were saying, I don't know what the percentage is of sulfur, but let's call it 20%. That's 160 pounds. You should be good.
All right. Thanks, Caleb. Really appreciate the question. Got another sulfur question for you, Brian. This one comes from MD, who says, Marty. From Marty, and he's in North Carolina. He said, I've had four fields tested, and the sulfur on one of them was 746 pounds per acre. The other three ranged anywhere from 40 to 50 on the parts per million, so I'm assuming that's 80 to 100 pounds. He said, my cation shame capacities are only 3 to 4, and my organic matter is only 1.5 to 1.8. Why would I have such a high level of sulfur, and is it necessarily a bad thing?
It's not a bad thing. A lot of that's going to disappear on you this year. The first thing I would think about is, well, number one, I would ask you, what did you do out there? Because you must have done something dramatic. Or number two, you've got incorrect soil samples, incorrect soil test results, I should say. So maybe let's just say when a sample was pulled, there weren't enough cores taken. It was right at a hot spot where somebody dropped a bag or they were fixing a spreader or whatever. So my guess is if you did, let's call it 1 acre, 2.5 acre, 5 acre grids out there and you pulled 8 to 12 cores in each spot, you would not find that to be consistent across the field because that sounds ridiculously high for as light as your soil is. But no, I'm not worried that that's, even if it was true, is that going to hurt anything? No.
All right. Thanks for the question, Marty. Got one here from Steve, and he said, what's the best herbicide to kill poison ivy near a tree line that won't kill desirable trees? There are a couple of normal strategies here that people are doing, using triclopyr.
Yep, and like Remedy Ultra.
And using glyphosate by cutting and treating the stump with glyphosate.
Yep.
Would one of those two methods work without hurting my desirable trees?
Well, either one of those could damage trees. Roundup is much easier on trees typically than triclopyr. Triclopyr, that's what it's for, is killing brush, basically. It just doesn't have a whole bunch of residual. That's why it gets used near trees, because unlike Tordon or Milestone, it's not going to go down into the soil and get into the root systems of those trees and kill them that way. But yeah, I would be a little bit concerned. What I typically recommend with this poison ivy thing, I say don't get too worried about it. Just go with a massive rate of 2,4-D, the highest labeled rate, early in the spring and late in the fall. You do it twice a year when the leaves have already dropped off the trees, and now you're in good shape. So that's what I would do. But yeah, I mean, you can certainly use those methods if you want to in season because it gets tough. I mean, with 2,4-D, the old 2,4-D moves around a lot. Maybe you can find some of the new Freelix. That's fantastic to be about the same thing as what you're going to find in List 1. We don't see all the volatility. But yeah, you got to be careful around those trees. You don't want to damage them.
All right, Brian sent in a comment here. He said, I was watching a video you put together on fallow syndrome. I'm wondering, what are the host crops for mycorrhizae fungi?
Almost everything. If you go to our website, so I'm just going to pull it up right here. I got my
computer. We've only got about four or five examples listed there, Brian. They changed our sheet.
Oh, they took the chart off? Oh, my goodness. We got to get that changed then. So we used to have a really nice chart there. So anyway, it's under the resources tab at AgPhD. And if you go to cover crop chart, that should have a really nice chart for. Oh, yeah, it's still on there, Darren. And so if you look under, okay, so again, go to agphd.com. Go under the resources tab. Point number 7 on workshop materials says, cover crop, agronomy and soils events, additional materials. You have to go click under that. And anyway, it's number 7, it's cover crop chart, and there will be a PDF that will pop up. And underneath that, then you can see this, let's see, it'd be the third column over, says mycorrhizal fungi association, and you can see which crops are the best. So there are lots. The only ones that are basically going to be non-existent would be things like sugar beets, radishes, winter camelina, kale. There aren't a lot that don't host it. Most of the grass crops are really good. Even some of the broadleaf crops, like let's say soybeans is not too bad. Turnips, not too bad. Peas, vetch, all those things, not too bad. So no, most things will actually do a pretty decent job hosting mycorrhizal fungi. Nothing to get too concerned about. Just get some, almost anything growing out there. But yeah, be a little bit careful. That's why, too, we talk about with cover crops. A lot of times people don't even realize exactly what they're doing on the cover crop thing. They say, I'm not sure. Just give me some cover crop blend, whatever. Well, you just want to make sure you have something in there that helps host the mycorrhizal fungi. So be a little bit fussy on your cover crops, and then you should have no problem.
Thanks for the question. Got this one from Ryan in East Central Illinois. He said, I'm using your 3-pre strategy and beyond, but my question here, he said, my focus is on water hemp. My question to you is, could I run my trifluralin by itself before I work the ground, then plant, and then spray my PPO metribuzin and throw some metolachlor with it for additional overlap or residuals. My issues are this. Is there any problem with using a group 15 and a yellow? Number two, how long do I have to work in the trifluralin? And
preferably within an hour.
Basically, he said 80 acres lag time is about how much he has the way he's doing it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Trifluralin is so much cheaper than Prowl that even if you lose a little bit, it's not like it's the end of the world. It's cheap. So bump the rate a little bit if you're going to be 80 acres behind. Instead of using a pint and a half, use a pint and 3/4 or something like that. That will hopefully cover the little bit of loss that you're going to have in that 80 acres of time. Now, for us on our farm, what we'll do is we'll go trifluralin plus metribuzin plus a PPO. Then we'll come back on our first post spray and throw the metolachlor in then, if we even need it then. But I'm just saying that way we get longer residual. That's kind of the point of putting that metolachlor in a little later. Now we're spraying 2-3, maybe even sometimes 4 weeks later with that metolachlor. So we have longer in-season residual, and we believe you're gonna have a little bit better results with water hemp that way. But yes, you can do exactly what you're talking about.
Thanks for the questions, Ryan, and also thanks for watching our show and being such a loyal viewer. Really appreciate that. Thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.